Hello. Welcome to the Tuesday night discussion group. We're glad that everybody's here. We're going to be having a discussion tonight on anger, which is one of the twin pillars, as Sarno states in his books, which is anger and fear. So this is going to be a good show about, talking about anger. This is something everybody has built up on inside of them that creates the pain. So we need to get to the, try to get to the bottom of this and learn how to release this anger. I don't know many people that do know how to release it except the people that's on this call right now to talk tonight, the peers. So we're going to get started with it. This is Stephen Ozenich's book, The Great Pain Deception. We're going to be studying chapter 26. Again, like I said, it's anger. And I need to let everybody know before we start that none of us are medical or mental health professionals. And if you do have any medical concerns, you should see a properly licensed physician or a TMS physician. Now, with that being said, every week we have a great intro by Bruce MC. And Bruce, if you want to take it over.
Well, tonight we'll be discussing chapter 26 of Steve Ozenich's Great Pain Deception, which was published in 2011 recently. And it's entitled Holding On to Anger. Steve says someplace in the text here that he regards holding on to anger as superego selling out to ego. I'm going to give an outline of his. The logic of his argument, since there are so many details here. We were just discussing that you could take a yellow highlighter and probably highlight every sentence in this
Yes.
5-page chapter and have a discussion thereof. But if you see the underlying logic of his argument, we can branch out from there. And on page 271, Steve begins, "Many people in pain have told Steve that they aren't angry. They often appear smiling, mild-mannered, polite, responsible, controlled, and cooled acting. This outward image hides a hellfire inferno lying just beneath their awareness, but deep within they know it. They're aware of it in a certain kind of holistic way." And he says further on that they're quiet, polite, non-confrontational, goodist, and extremely isolated, like the infamous Sung Hui Cho of the Virginia Tech Massacre, who exploded into a rage of killing. And no one knew it. Steve emphasizes that the key problem is that most people don't understand the concept of subconscious activity. This is why he goes on to say they persistently tell him, while clutching their asthma inhaler, or pain is radiating down their legs, or they're suffering yet another bout of anxiety, that they reply, "Nah, you're way off, man. I'm a laid-back person. I got to give you a big fat no on that, Steve-o." Steve points out that repression works outside of awareness, and these people aren't aware of it. However, Steve experienced his own epiphany regarding the role of anger in his pain when he heard Dr. Sarno on a videotape emphasizing that the rage that is causing your pain you will never feel. And that brought him to awareness of how this mechanism works. So how do you deal with anger repressed into your unconscious so that it manifests as physical pain in different parts of your body? Steve recommends in this chapter three basic strategies. He says, burn it. That's what he did when he went out running fanatically day after day. He describes this in earlier chapters. He says, vigorous physical movement to temporarily discharge it. It discharges it, jogging, walking, table tennis, swimming. But he adds, however, the root problem remains, so it's only a temporary fix. And he says another part of the three strategies, the second strategy, is face it. Now, this is like emotional release work, like ISTDP. But on page 275, Steve makes the telling point that to feel and talk away anger may be two of the best ways to purge unexpressed energy, but it bypasses it. A key element in healing, which is forgiveness. He says that's one of the things that just experiencing it doesn't get you to. And the third method, the real way to do it, is to transform it. He says the Reverend Buddhist monk Thich Nhat Hanh, in his book Anger, Wisdom for Cooling the Flames, advocates compassionate listening as a way of dissolving anger. According to Hanh, you have to transform the energy of anger held in your emotional bodies, i.e. the TMS pain in different areas of your body, your back, your knee, your ankles, whatever symptoms you have, into compassionate and positive energy by embracing it. Steve says that you can do this by practicing mindfulness. And he says that anger can be transformed through mindfulness. And he says mindfulness is, as Steve and others, most notably Howard Schubner, have defined it, the practice of being present and aware of what's going on without any judgment, simply observing what is, body and mind united. And that's a very brief overview of the logic of this chapter, with out going into asides about early childhood, separation anxiety, or all of the details that come along, which we can bring up as we discuss it. Herbie, do you have any questions?
I want to elaborate on the first one. Was, you know, from page 272. Steve said, I never knew, talking about the anger, he said, I never knew it existed in me. I simply never felt it. Now, and then, well, that's, you know, pretty much the core of the next clause I'm fixing to say is something you just mentioned in the summary there, that you will never feel the anger that is causing your pain. And to me, that always ran through my head like, okay, now Sarnold did say current pressures, you know, could add to it, you know, and you know, but what is he really getting to right there? What is he really meaning? And I really have understood this for quite a while, but it's still so hard to explain how, you know, again, you will never feel the anger that is causing your pain. And then we'd say, well, why is it that the current pressures, you know, can cause the pain to agitate us and make us hurt? Well, of course, it's just adding to what's already been built up inside there that's been repressed, right? It's adding to it, and then it's spilling over, right? It's like the, it's just too much, and then it's spilling over. But it's the part where Steve says, I simply never felt it. You know, it was unconscious. It was subconscious. We simply never feel this pain or this anger that's causing the pain. And then we have to learn how to release it. And there's so many people, like he spoke in this chapter here, that says, I'm not angry. Well, I was one of them. I couldn't understand, you know, after being a preacher for so many years and, you know, walking the right path. Of course, this will be brought up more here shortly. But how could I be angry? I mean, what was I angry at? Of course, I've got a million things I could be angry at. I know now. But when I first started learning, you know, about TMS, I just couldn't understand how in the world could I have this much anger on inside of me. But at the same time, again, I'm going to get right back to what he said here. And you said in your summary, you'll never feel the anger that is causing your pain. That is something that people can't wrap their head around. They can't get what that means. Yeah. Can somebody explain that? Can somebody, or does it?
Well, I think you begin to understand it better when you intellectually come to the intellectual appreciation that 95% of all mental activity in your brain occurs beneath the conscious level. Then you can understand the enormity of what this rage might be. And Steve also notes on page 272 that the angriest people I talk with are those who were abandoned, molested, or ignored as children, or were forced into religious beliefs that they couldn't understand and made to walk the goodest path. And I think that gets back to that story of Helen that Dr. Sarno cites quite often in all of his books, where she had been molested as a child, and during therapy, the anger, when she started attending that therapy group for women who had been molested, when the anger started to raise to the surface, that's an anomaly where it actually does come to the surface and manifest itself. And that's when the pain left her dramatically.
Yeah, she got home, fell on the floor, went in intense pain. It just got excruciating. She was crying and everything. And then it just came out, right?
Yeah, it was not unconscious anymore. But she's the exception.
And this is what Steve wanted, remember, from the beginning. He wanted to have that. I think we all did. I think we all wanted to have Helen's experience. The thing is, do we really know what Helen went through, and would somebody really want that? How many times have we heard people, they would lose the pain, but then when the anxiety part, you know, would come on, then they'd be coming on the TMS Wiki saying, I would rather have the pain back, you know? I mean...
Well, I think Steve says that one of the problems of venting your anger and rage is it perpetuates it. It programs those neural pathways to continue that way. You're not really getting rid of it. You're just developing a new bad habit of externalizing your rage on people around you. I guess that's the same kind of thing that goes on with road rage, where it gets out of control.
I really like that.
I like that. Go ahead, Forrest.
I was just saying that I really like that approach of transforming. And I think that's, for me, one of the most interesting parts of the chapter is, okay, so you have the anger, and then what do you do with it? And I totally get that idea of kind of walking it off, using the physical activity to let it cool down a little bit. And I think that makes sense. And I think a lot of people are interested in kind of expressing it violently, like, you know, beating up a pillow or whatever else. And I kind of get that, you know, that I think that probably doesn't help most of the time as much as working on transforming it. But the question is, how do you transform? I guess that's what I found to be really interesting in this chapter is what sort of techniques do we have to do that transformation?
Well, you noticed when he in that section on transformation, I think it is where he starts, where Steve mentions Andy Weil's experience with cancer patients, mm-hmm. where he found that those who go to fight it succumb to it, whereas those who come to terms with it as part of themselves in a part of a holistic model and aren't angry at themselves anymore actually heal quicker and better than those who are engaged in a war.
I love that, man. That's so true. Enjoy. You want to say anything about that?
I don't know. This is a topic that absolutely buffaloes me. I come from a family where there's a lot of awareness of anger, and yet Dr. Sarno is saying that the anger that causes your TMS, you will never know. So this has got me flummoxed. I don't know what to think.
Yeah, I'm still trying to figure out what that means when he says you'll never feel the anger that's causing the pain, right?
Yeah, I've got relatives that are in a rage all the time. I've got in-laws who have never felt an angry moment in their lives except you know something, almost all of them, when you talk to them, there was a moment in their childhood when they got so mad about something that it just turned white hot and they could have just killed at that moment. And I think a lot of people have experienced that. And I think what happens, what it seems to be to happen is that it scares you so badly that the anger just disappears inside and never shows itself again.
Because so it's not socially acceptable? Because that goes against... Because it's not socially acceptable to act...
You almost murdered somebody because you're shocked by the depth and the strength of what you just felt. Like you were telling that story about the patient. I can't remember her name, but Helen. You're saying she was Helen. The exception. Helen felt that rage, right? Mm-hmm. And most people never... Sarno's saying you do not feel that rage, and yet is he saying that Helen was an exception to that? Did Helen actually get in touch with that rage that apparently exists in all of us? Is that what he was saying?
Yeah, Helen's the exception.
I think it's interesting as a footnote that Gabor Mate notes in Hungry Ghosts that it's his experience in the drug ghetto there in Vancouver that 100% of all of his female patients who were addicted to hard drugs, cocaine, opioids, heroin, were molested as children.
Yeah.
No exceptions. Whoa. So they must have a huge amount of rage build up inside them, self-destructive rage that they have to cancel some way.
I feel like we all have that to one extent or another, even if we haven't been subjected to that extreme, we all have it because the world is so annoying to the little person that we are that's born in here. We have no control. We're flopping around. We're just, it must be just a rage. I'm very fascinated by the concept of a lower self and a higher self, a side of us that's kind of animalistic, in sync with our animal body, and then a higher self that's in sync with our higher mind, and that we can use to think things through the way an animal can't do. So whatever it is that makes us a little different kind of an animal than the dog or whatever, right? Like, I've got dogs and I watch them all the time, and they're fine as long as everything's going well. But it's so easy to trigger them into animalistic behavior. And I'm sure there's a part of us that's like that too. But we've overlaid that with the higher self, and you can call that the superego, you can call it, whatever you, but we're aware that we have that keeps that thing under control. But when someone like Helen gives us a glimpse of what it's like to just lose that for a few minutes, right? Then that's giving us all a look into something that, if it's true of Helen's, it's true of all of us. Does that make any sense?
If it's true of Helen, then it's true of all of us?
Well, yeah, don't you think so? I mean, Helen's a human being, we're a human being, she's our species. If it's true of her, it's true of us. And so that, to me, that lends credence to what Sarno is saying. Okay, the vast majority of people may never be aware of that depth of rage. But the occasional breakthrough, as in happens when, for example, your brother, you say you've got an older brother, and he's teased you, and he's teased you, and he's teased you, and he's teased you, and all of a sudden you just go into a rage, and you pick up a stick, and you try and kill him.
Yeah, but see, right? But you don't feel it, right? Listen,
feel it. You're Helen.
Well, you're releasing the rage then. You're releasing it. See, you're releasing it.
Happens to those people is they never do it again.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, they say about when you burn out. If you burn out at a job, you don't do it again because you know the signs now. and you know what to be careful of, and you can tell when you're going there, right? Yeah. So they can feel that. They can feel that rage start to stir, and so they pull back, and they say, no, I don't have anger. I'm not angry.
And what happens to
people? So I don't know what our
anger?
Friend here is saying about how to transform it. I honestly
I'm going to explain it real quick, okay? It's like this. When we hold in the anger, okay, we feel it through anxiety. We feel it through pain. The pain, see, people doesn't know that when you hold in this anger, okay, again, he says you will never feel the anger that is causing your pain. Why? Because the pain is what you're feeling, not the anger. You see?
Feeling it. Okay.
So that made better sense, right? See, it took me forever, Enjoy, to figure that out.
And yeah.
It's you're not feeling the anger, but you're feeling the pain, or you're feeling the anxiety, or you're feeling the depression, or you're feeling the remorse, or whatever it might be, but you're not feeling the anger, see? But you're feeling the pain. And that's what he means by that.
Okay. Okay. Well, that makes sense. Thank you. That makes sense.
I mean,
about it, though, because you don't want the pain.
Correct.
And on the other hand, you don't want this white hot anger.
Not the kind you're talking about. Right. That is such a good question. It's so good that you went into it like that, because people need to know what this means. You know, people really need to understand that what Dr. Sarno and what Steve means when they say you'll never feel the anger that is causing your pain. Why? It's because you're feeling the pain. You know, it's because you're feeling the depression. It's because you're feeling the sickness or the illness or the allergies or whatever it might be. You know, it's pretty powerful, you know, to know that, you know. But you brought up a lot of good things, and you brought up something about Helen, you know, and Helen's one of them where we read the book, you know, and everybody wants to be like Helen. Everybody, again, like I was saying a while ago, everybody wants to be, get what Helen got. I know I did. I wanted to be able to just let it all out and, you know, be free of the pain. But the thing was, I had to learn what releasing meant. I had to learn what focusing meant. I had to learn, you know, what mindfulness meant. And then I learned how to release. Then, you know, that's some of the ways I've done it. And of course, it's explained in this chapter, thank God. You know, what do you think, Bruce?
Well, I think Steve says on page 273, he talks about how we react to these murderous attitudes. And he brings in Jung. He says, murder, wounding others, lying, infidelity, stealing, suicide, and lack of compassion are culturally taboos. Okay, they go against the moral code, the received moral code that's been indoctrinated into you by school, mom and dad, the tablet of Hammurabi or whatever. Ineffable thoughts, but everyone has them. Everyone has these dark side shadow images of what Jung called positively demonic dynamism. And when they begin to surface, we must either act on them, i.e. beat up your brother with a stick, or punish ourselves for thinking them. So there's
that was me.
There, and that's where repression has to start, when we start punishing ourselves for thinking thoughts that are outside of the rules of the superego code of society. That's when
like
punishment
erotic.
Begins then. And we a lot of the pain that we experience in TMS is self-punishment.
Yes.
I think for that, as a way to resolve that conflict between the id and the superego. Since we can't completely indulge the id and just start bashing. I can remember that with my cousin. We'd just be together 3 days and suddenly there'd be this big explosion and we'd be on the floor beating the heck out of each other. And we never... Yeah, it was really because we were in the family where we were both number one, and neither of us could stand not being number one and this had to be resolved in a nice flashpoint of rolling her out of the floor and deciding who was number one. It's like, what do they say? We'll decide who rules the world after my army beats the heck out of your army. Then we'll sit down at the peace conference.
Hello.
Then we'll have a peace conference after the battle.
Wow. You know, guys, I can fully understand what he means, what Bruce was talking about there, about the, you know, I didn't have religion pushed on me, you know, but I went into it full-fledged, and I talk about it all the time. But at the same time, the whole time I was in it, the whole time, I never thought that I was good enough. I never thought I was good enough, even though I had a smile on my face the whole time, even though, you know, Lord, the people I was helping, and it was, you would think I'd be the happiest person in the world. But I thought that I was always just below being good enough for God. You know, I thought I was never good enough. So I was self-punishing myself nearly for 7 or 8 years there. I think almost 10 years I was self-punishing myself exactly the way Grodek says in one of the page 273 here. He says, it, pain and illness has to punish a sin against the commandment. You know, I was flipping through the channels one day. This is about my third year in the ministry, and I've said this before. All I ever watched was just, you know, if I was going to do this, I'm going to do it 100%. That's just the way I do everything. That's the way we are, as good as perfectionists, whichever one you fall into. But, it fell on Britney Spears, and she had that white snake around her neck and everything, and I just gazed at it for 3 seconds, and man, I turned the channel right quick. I had to run and fall on my knees, start asking God to forgive me. For 3 months I was putting myself through self-punishment, and I didn't even think I was worthy to even go back to that, you know, church to help people. And you know, that was just a common flash while you're changing channels. But it was the self-punishment I was putting myself through. But it's not just religion. It's this could go into a million things, right, Joy? Right? It could go into a million things.
Well, it's part of the human psyche again. If you, I don't know if you've done any reading. I've done very little, but I'm just getting started. But if you have ever read the great religious masters like Saint Augustine and like Saint Teresa of Avila and these people from the past who describe exactly what you are talking about.
Wow.
Exactly. It happens to all the great saints of history. Apparently, Mother Teresa went through exactly the same thing for year after year after year. She had to go through this incredible feeling of not being ever good enough for God, because I think what they're going to come to is because you're not. That's why. Because God is a concept that is so beyond the human idea of goodness that we could never meet it. We could never meet it. So we just have to reach a place where we're content with that. We're content with our place. You know, I'm getting into theology here, and I don't know one thing about theology,
but I've actually started
to study it. It's interesting that this is coming up.
Yeah, you said it perfect, too, because when I finally understood that, hey, I'm good enough, God made me like this,
That's right.
I'm going to be happy the way I am, and I'm a pretty good old guy, and I'm just going to settle with that, then all of a sudden, pressures and things started releasing off from me, you know? And this was actually happening through my TMS healing experience. So, wow, you know, it's amazing. You wouldn't believe the men out there that's really, helping a lot of people that are really down on themselves, and women that just do not think they're good enough. But they're out there with a smile on their face every day doing it, and they really are good people. But anyway, this goes into a lot of different areas.
Yeah, well, you read that about what John Lee, anger guru, was saying, where people erroneously associate being treated like garbage as a form of love that we somehow deserve. And that's part of this self-punishment thing in TMS. It's this low self-esteem. We somehow deserve this punishment, this pain, because we aren't quite good enough. Maybe because we've been tempted to act out these fantasies that aren't socially acceptable. We're all tempted by those things, you know.
I've seen
to break
so
the rules. But if you're
so many people, go ahead.
But
go
if
ahead,
your
Chris.
Self-esteem isn't strong enough because of your early childhood separation, then you can fall into this pattern of continuously punishing yourself and thinking you deserve it. It's a self-fulfilling prophecy, solipsistic argument.
I've seen some great, good people that had gifts, man, that it would just blow your mind, and they could do things to help people, but they just thought they weren't good enough. They just thought that they had done things 15, 20 years ago and that was the reason that they couldn't go forth and become who they had been called to be in life. And it was so sad. Even though I went on and I did it, and I still had this on the inside of me that I wasn't good enough, I did it anyway, you know? I did it anyway. But other people I knew wouldn't even take the step forth because they didn't think they were good enough.
I think Dr. Sarno implies in Healing Back Pain someplace that one of the characteristics of our society, of Western civilization, is the father passing on this sense of low self-esteem to the son, of not being good enough, so the son will compensate for it and make up for it. And then he does the same thing again and again, generation after generation, like original sin or something like that, like something that's wrong with our civilization, that we accomplish so much due to an inferiority complex.
It's something.
Building bridges, designing circuits.
The beauty that comes out of the chaos is awesome. Is that what you're saying? I mean,
but it's all out of these false premises, out of this inferiority complex that is passed on generation to generation to generation. I think you see that very much in the generation in Germany after World War I, where the father felt inferior because he'd been beaten by the Allies, but then the son couldn't accept that because daddy is all powerful. So dad passed on the notion to him that we'd been stabbed in the back by the communists, by the socialists, by the liberals, by the Jews. And so the next generation went out there and attacked the world to make up for their parents' low self-esteem for losing the war. Well, we beat them bad enough that they finally got over that. I think that's why they completely reduced Germany to ashes, so that wouldn't go on again. They recognized that. Guys like Eisenhower and Bradley and Churchill were smart enough to see that they wanted to get out of that vituperative, vindictive, vengeful path of history. But the only way they could do it was, level the place, destroy it, and then build it up again. But
what about this final roadblock he talks about here on page 271 and how it angers people? And and he says he believes the conflict, when you tell people what it really is, what's going on with them, and then, and then it angers them. A lot of people, we've had a lot of people on here enjoy that they understand it. They get to understand it, and then they try to tell family members about it. And I mean, these people just get plumb mad at you. They don't want to hear it. They could be sitting there and you know, half dead and barely even walking through the door, but they don't want to hear you telling them, you know, that it could be from repressed emotions. They don't want to hear it. And go ahead.
Well, Steve emphasizes this at the top of page 272. These people who won't accept the fact of unconscious rage, they are living inside. They just don't know it because they don't understand how the unconscious works in silence. I didn't get it at first, and neither do they. Repression works outside of awareness. That's the big point of this chapter, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's what you don't hear. It's that whole idea in Freud of unconscious intentionality, the same thing that creates Freudian slips.
Exactly.
In mistakes in expression. Yeah. Well, it's a hard concept to swallow, isn't it?
Well, like you said a while ago, you know, it's like you're the tip of the iceberg, and then underneath that iceberg, you got the other 95% of you. And that's why, you know, we have to tell people over and over and over again, you have to stay in there. And as Sarno says in his video, in his books, you know, you have to let this sink in. You have to read it over and over and over until it sinks in, until you start to understand it. I know I didn't. Well, I pretty much grasped a hold of it when I first read it. I did. I've been reading a lot of psychology over the years. But really, you know, how many people you know that just don't get it? I've heard so many people say, you know, I read that book and that ain't me, you know, and that makes no sense to me.
Controlling aspect of ego? Ego wants to be able to control everything. And if you tell it it's not in charge, then it's going to have a hissy fit.
What ego don't understand, it doesn't even want to take the time to mess with it, right?
Yeah, it just puts it outside of its awareness as if it doesn't exist. It just that little 5% is trying to say it knows everything.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. That's interesting.
Good.
Yeah, it's, tip of the iceberg is, boy.
That's right. You know, and we're also talking about what people can't see, you know, and it's difficult to believe in what people can't see, as he says in his chapter here, you know. I think he says skepticism is easier than seeking the truth. You know, the skepticism is, or like you said, you just, you know, not even deal with it. You know, it's a lot easier than seeking the truth, you know.
That gets, that's so interesting. I'm reading on page 275, where Hans states that denying anger is due to pride. I think that's what you said, Bruce.
Yeah, that's what we're coming to, isn't it?
That is why so many people claim they aren't angry. Their pride will not allow them to admit to such a cultural weakness. But anger is born inside everyone. Not only are we born with it, we also consume it daily and need to attend to it with compassion. Whoa. So that's the true self. That's some kind of, to attend to it with compassion. That the implication there is some higher part of us is going to attend to it with compassion.
Steve says that Hans' experience has shown him that the best way to handle anger is to transform the energy of anger into compassionate and positive energy by embracing it, by feeling it.
And that's mindfulness. And to me, when he spoke about that mindfulness, it sounded exactly the way I use focusing. You know, so mindfulness or focusing, whichever one you want to call it, that's the way I use it. You know, I look at it, but I don't judge it. I don't fear it. I don't run from it.
That's exactly what Howard Schubiner instructs his patients to do in his meditations.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what you do in IFS, too. You approach the part and you listen to it and you love it with compassion and you ask it what you can do for it. You don't give into it. You give to it. You help it. You
like
let
soul
it
song.
Go.
Like that soul song says, respect yourself.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's wonderful that we can see all the parallels between the different approaches. I think that's one of the big reasons why I've always wanted to promote the IFS mailing list. Is I think that it gives people a great way to learn that skill, because that listening really is crucial to TMS healing, I think, to any sort of healing. I think that's where focusing came about. Eugene Gendland was he's the guy who invented focusing. He was a philosopher, and he was studying how, like at University of Chicago, perhaps, and he was studying existence and how we perceive existence. And he just noticed that we had this felt sense. We can just feel things. That's the most basic thing. And then he decided to apply that to psychotherapy. But that's mindfulness in some sense, is we all just need to be mindful of what it is that we're feeling. We have to listen to those parts.
So that's where Michael Brown picks up the felt sense from that philosopher. That seems to be the cornerstone of his methodology at the start of the presence process, developing the felt sense. He instructs you to do that before you launch into the presence process. I've gotten that far.
That might be. I don't know. Yeah,
I have to look at it more.
Well, I was reading some on that presence process today too, and it seems just like what I learned from focusing, what I've learned in mindfulness, and I'm still learning IFS and what Enjoy there brought up. It rings so true. I mean, we look at these parts of us, we look at these emotions and we sense them and we know they're there. We don't judge them, we don't fear them, we don't try to run from them. We just notice they're there, and before you know it, it's being released.
Yeah,
it's a totally different way than people think how you release it. The guy mentions, exercise. And when I think of exercise, I know that I can feel better when I get back in it. But at the same time, it still doesn't get to the core part, like focusing or mindfulness or IFS therapy. And the things you learn, like the 12 daily reminders in TMS therapy and the things you learn in the process, presence process, they all got their special in the IFS therapy. They all got their special little things that opens your eyes to new sets of wisdom that can help you release this build up traumatic energy. Anger and fear,
I think that goes along with what Sarno says about exercise. It's easy to mistake exercise as a form of cure, as a way of curing the TMS, but it's a way of burning off the energy that's accumulated. You can actually perpetuate it by thinking of exercise as a cure. You can keep it going that way. You don't exercise to heal it. You exercise to burn off the energy. You can't mistake the exercise as the cure. And
no.
It's easy to do that.
It's a form of release of buildup, anxiety or extra stress. But at the same time, it's just going to come right back because you're not hitting, the main core part of what's causing the issues you're having.
Well, I think it's easy to confuse getting better by going on walks, for example, or hikes, with getting better because you're doing the mental work. Actually, the mental work goes on in the background. It's not the hiking, it's not the leg presses, it's not the pull-ups. Although these things might build your confidence, it's really the mental work you're doing at the same time that lowers the level of pain that's going on in the background while you're exercising. It's not a cause and effect kind of thing. But the mind wants to grasp onto it, doesn't it? The ego. You want to think that because you've done this, you've made yourself better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's what happened to me in 2003. I've mentioned it plenty of times. I got to exercising real hard, and I just figured, I'd actually read it in a book on one page that 70 or 80% of the people that exercise and just exercise against the pain, they will come out of this and heal, their back issues, their pain issues. And I believe that. And so I started exercising. I started exercising real, real hard. And I believed in my mind that if I could strengthen up my core, then I was going to get better. And for about 8 years, I had this level 1 or 2 pain that I talk about that 8, 9 years, whatever, all the time. But it came back on me, I didn't really know I didn't really know what I really needed to do until, the last couple of years.
But you didn't address the core issues.
Exactly. I didn't. But in my mind, I believed if I, did that weightlifting and everything, then the pain would subside. And it did. It subsided all the way down to like a 1 or 2. And I stayed that way for several years. But what I'm getting at is belief is a powerful thing. It's that powerful, What do you think, Enjoy, about the belief part?
Well, I'm just reading another paragraph along from the statement of Han about denying anger is due to pride. And there's a different author here, but they're saying compassion quells anger and protects us, since we are all part of potential higher streams of consciousness, one heart, one mind. When one person suffers, we all suffer. When you suffer, others suffer. And then this is the part that's really interesting. When I suffer, I'm going to make certain you suffer. So we're so in this together. We cannot disconnect our experience from other people's experience. This is this one heart, one mind, a stream of higher consciousness that we're all part of. I suppose Jung's collective unconscious, it's to some degree unconscious, it's to some degree conscious. I don't know where the line goes. But it's fascinating. We are one organism. We are one with everything, in a sense, but particularly with our fellow human beings. And if we're feeling something, they're feeling it, and they can't help feeling it because we're feeling it. And like this thing this is just I got to think about this one. When one person suffers, we all suffer. When you suffer, others suffer. When I suffer, I am going to make certain you suffer. Right? So we're not in this just for ourselves. Mm-hmm. And I that's a huge mistake to think that we are. Because without the participation of the whole collective stream of consciousness of humanity and beyond of the universe. Like, I know this is getting really airy-fairy, but this is where this is taking me. This is where this stuff is taking me.
Ask for whom the bell tolls. It tolls for thee. It sounds very much like John Donne's meditation. But
I mean, you can go too far with this stuff, and you grab yourself and you got to say, okay, but I am also an individual, right? I am also, mm-hmm. I'm a part of a collective whole, but I'm also an individual. But yeah, exactly, Bruce, that's well put. When the bell tolls, it tolls.
That's what John Donne, not me. He really put it well.
I know.
But at the end of the section on transforming it, Steve cites James Pennebaker, PhD, who has shown that confiding and listening are major factors in healing and in dealing with anger. Along with forgiving herself and showing compassion and kindness toward others, she desperately needs to know that someone understands her. He's talking about the pain patient as she.
Yes.
This compassionate understanding and communicating with others seems to be a key in the transformational process.
Mm-hmm.
Something Steve emphasizes.
And that's another thing that IFS does, is that it very elegantly allows us to take both parts of that. We are the witness, and we are the listener. You know, we don't always have to, if we're alone and we have no one to talk to and no one who understands us and no one that we can understand and feel that oneness that we have with all things, we can do that within ourselves, because we also are separate entities, in a sense, within ourselves. I love that focusing that you were talking about before. That was one of the real breakthroughs for me, and I found it just such a beautiful process to feel an intense feeling of, oh my God, what is this? I don't know what this is. And to be able to go into a meditative state and to go inside and to, I do this thing where I kind of walk around the problem and I just look at the outside of it and I say, what is the felt sense? What is the word or the symbol or the sound or whatever it is, because people are different. What does this mean to me? And if I could calm myself enough and just be with that presence, that feeling that I was having, I would suddenly think, oh, gosh, it's so-and-so.
It's interesting, too, that Steve recommends something as simple as breathing as a way to transform it.
Yes.
Because it's impossible to be angry and be calmly breathing at the same time. Anger shortens breathing as the body reacts to tension. This is why TMSers are breath holders. They're constantly angry. So you can deal directly with this stuff in your body through I guess that's yogic breathing. That's pranayama, I believe.
I've been doing a lot of the breathing for about the past 3 weeks. I mean a lot. And it really has made me feel a lot better. It's got me a little glow to my skin a little bit. But my energy levels has really went way up. It's like it's better than running and playing football. You know, that's how I used to get a lot of energy, is running and playing football, backyard football. But the breathing, real deep breathing, holding it for a long time and blowing out for a long time, breathing in for a long time, it really sent my energy levels way up. But the and no telling what else I'm going to get from it, because I keep doing it because I love it.
Slows the mental gossip down too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But the focusing, you know, and what Enjoy was talking about there, it just changed my whole life when I understood that I didn't have to run from this emotion anymore. I could sit there with it. I could ponder it. I could check it out without judging it, because in the past I'd fear it. I'd try to run from it. You know, whatever it was, I could get away from it. You know, but now I know I can just focus on it, ponder it, look at it, be non-judgmental of it. You know, and then it just kind of dissipates. But we take these to transform it, like you're saying, Bruce. And what is these? Burn it, he said. The exercise and the temporary. Other things we do, like hitting pillows and such, and then face it, which is, to me, facing is like the focusing, the mindfulness, the IFS, the different things like that. And then the other one he had was transform the anger into compassion and positive energy by embracing it. Those were pretty much his way of dealing with this, right, Bruce?
Yeah, it's like the final statement he makes in the box. about that Steve puts in the box at the end of the chapter. So the answer to cooling the flames, as Han has experienced, is to recognize that you are angry, okay, and then take good care of it. Also recognize that when others get mad at you, they are suffering. Make peace. And then he says something really important. Make peace with yourself first, and then you can make peace with others. You know, until you've established that equal poise internally, you're going to be always in an uproar.
I love that.
And then Han would advocate that when you feel the pain in your back, send it your love. And
exactly.
Yep.
This is just what we've been talking about on the mailing list today, is that not a matter of running away from our pain and, oh my God, trying to find some way to get it away from us, to avoid it. It's to turn around, face it, accept it, embrace it, transform it. Because that pain is trying to tell you something important about your life.
That's right. And then we find out.
Friends.
And that's what you do with outcome independence, isn't it? When you're, if you're walking along and you're hurting, you send out your compassionate acceptance of the pain without any kind of preconceived notions about getting over it or anything. Just accept it and like it. Treat it equally.
Yeah.
So I believe we could wrap it up with self-compassion, facing it, facing the, the not running from, the emotions that come from this pain, from this anger, focus on them, even send it love, and then transform it and learn to be more compassionate, not only for yourself, but the others.
And let it form you.
Yeah, like yourself first and then communicate it to other people in a compassionate way.
Wonderful.
I think that sums it up, guys. I think that's it. I think this is one of the best shows we've ever done, man.
I think so, too.
Same.
Forrest, anybody want to add anything before we call it a night? I mean, that sounds like a wrap to me.
Yeah, it's good for me.
Okay, next week, guys, it'll be on to chapter 27. And if this show doesn't help people understand how to deal with anger, nothing will. God bless you. Y'all have a good one, okay?
All right.